time to showcase the best of Sportsnet 650.
Here's J.C. Miller down the right way into the alley. So in front for Pettersson. He scores! Elias Pettersson to the rescue for the Canucks. His team leading 18th of the year.
This is the wrap-up with Rajah Sherdil on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
And what is going on, Vancouver? Welcome to the show. It is the wrap-up. I am Rajah Sherdil with you, Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Vancouver Canucks. Tweet at me, at share underscore Rajah. That is at S-H-E-R underscore R-A-J-A. Tweet at the station as well, at Sportsnet 650. That's how you can interact with us. And also via the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Great show for you guys today. We'll dive into some Vancouver Canucks talk. What has the team been up to? What should their plans be going into the trade deadline? Obviously, Tanner Pearson out with an injury 4 weeks is what we're hearing. That's what it sounds like for Tanner Pearson. The Vancouver Canucks falling last night to the Montreal Canadiens in a shootout. I'm not too worried about that loss necessarily. I mean, yeah, it is gut-wrenching. It is kind of shooting yourself in the foot if you want to make this playoffs. That being said, though, does it really matter as soon as the buzzer went at the end of the third period? Does it really matter if you had won or lost that game? Okay, sure, yeah, I guess so. It does matter because you wanted the 2 points instead of getting the one. But that being said, this is a Canucks team that cannot be giving up loser points, can they? I don't think so. You do it against Ottawa, it's fine. You do it against Toronto, it's fine. But not against the team that you are chasing in the North Division. That's not okay. Not if you want to make the playoffs, I don't think. Right, Thatcher Demko clawed this team, put this team on his back to get them within distance to really make this postseason, right? And it hasn't been a great season for Vancouver. We know that. But Thatcher Demko put this team on his back. Brock Besser has done the same. And we've had this conversation about if they can really get in. Can they get in? I think a lot of people wrote them off earlier on in the year. And now all of a sudden, we were starting to think, oh, maybe it is possible. Look how many wins they've sort of put together in the month of March after an absolutely terrible February. And yeah, you are playing good hockey, you're playing better games, but then again, when it comes to trying to win these games out in regulation, you failed to do so. And I don't want to be negative Nancy here. I don't want to pretend to be like I am harping a little too much on the Canucks right now. That being said, guys, if your expectation was the playoffs, then this is the kind of criticism that you kind of have to face because the questions are real. They're unable right now to put away teams in regulation. That happened against the Ottawa Senators. So it's not a storyline that we're making up or I'm making up just after two games against Montreal, right? If it was only against Montreal, you can kind of say, all right, this is a team that has Vancouver's number all season long. And it's unfortunate that when the season and when the games get so competitive, when they get so tight and you really need to try and win these games in regulation, it's unfortunate that you're making them go to overtime against the team that you're chasing. That's bad enough, but it's also happening against the Ottawa Senators. It doesn't matter when it's the Ottawa Senators. You can sure, if Ottawa picks up those extra loser points, not the end of the world. If Montreal does it, yeah, it's a little bit harder to get into the playoffs, is it not? A little bit harder to get into the playoffs. We'll talk a little bit more about that with Harpreet Pander. He is our guest on the second segment of this show. We'll go down memory lane with Harpreet as well, talk about the history of the NHL, some great storylines that have happened on this day in the NHL's history, March 21st, including what's happening, what happened here in Vancouver earlier on in the early 1900s as well. And also just get his thoughts around the general NHL, what's happening in Florida, man. Those two teams are really battling to try and be at the top of their respective divisions. And also Philadelphia Flyers. Probably the most surprising team in the NHL to me. So we'll dive a little bit deeper into what's happening, not only here with Vancouver and the Vancouver Canucks, but throughout the Canadian division, throughout the NHL as a whole with Harpreet Pandrew. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. And coming up in just a few minutes' time, he is Chris Faber. We're going to talk more about the Vancouver Canucks, what their plans should be going into the trade deadline, perhaps some expansion draft talk as well. We'll talk about all of that with Chris Faber from Canucks Conversation Podcast, writer at Canucks Army, and of course, our very own here at Sportsnet 650 as well. Chris, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining me. How are you?
Doing good, man. Ready to dive into some Canucks talk with you. I could do that with anybody at any time, so I'm stoked to do with you, man.
Awesome, man. You know, one conversation that I think a lot of people have been kind of talking about a lot is the Michael DiPietro situation. Vancouver Canucks, obviously having him on his taxi squad. He hasn't played for about a year now. What's your sort of take on this situation? I know some people have thought that Ian Clark, him being up here with Ian Clark is still going to be beneficial for his development despite not playing in games. I'm not sure how much I agree with that, but what are your thoughts on Michael DiPietro?
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. I mean, this is a young kid who isn't playing any type of action right now for hockey games. I mean, it's unfortunate. And I think for a player who's not playing in any games, being with Ian Clark this much amount of time might be the best case scenario for a guy who hasn't been in action in what is looking like 18 months now, potentially, if he doesn't get in this year. The Comets season, and this is something that's just kind of come up over the past week, the Comets season is now extended, right? They've had a couple of COVID cases where back-to-back weekends have been canceled. That means they've added two more weekends to the Comets schedule. Makes a lot of sense for DiPietro to get down to Utica and start to play some games. Whether that's bringing up Archer Seelovs to come in and be the third-string goalie, or potentially even Jake Kiley, or anybody that really hits waivers, adding a third goaltender that isn't Mikey DiPietro needs to be a priority for the Vancouver Canucks right now, because a full year of not playing in a single game is really going to hurt a 21-year-old goaltender who's really about to take a big step in development.
No, I think that's definitely true. Despite having a goalie guru as your goaltending coach, I don't think that necessarily makes as much of a difference as playing in, obviously, high-end games, man. The AHL is a hard league to play in. And case in point with that is guys like Cole Lind, right? When they first broke into that league, struggled a little bit. It was hard to find their footing, but now Lind and Gajewicz as well, a couple of second-round picks for the Canucks, have actually turned out to be putting up some points and even physically playing pretty good hockey. Let's start with Cole Lind. What do you like about him? Because his situation is a little bit different with other players on the team in the sense that he might be a player that Seattle looks at as somebody that they could snag off the Canucks for the expansion draft.
Yeah, most definitely. I think that he's showing a lot of promise right now, playing on the first line. Becoming a center now at the AHL level is a huge ask, and that's something that he's sort of accomplished this year. I mean, he's not electric in the faceoff dot. One of the funny things is he's a right-handed shot guy, but he's taking faceoffs left-handed so that he gets to use the weird flex on the stick when he comes back with the backhand. Something I talked about with him, he learned that from his younger brother, who, by the way, his younger brother drops into the Red Deer Rebels lineup, fights in his first game, scores a goal in his first game. He's going to be a guy that we're going to be talking about in the NHL draft a couple years. But that's the thing with Cole Lind is there's a thing going on right now with the Utica Comets, and you'd love to hear Trent Cole talk about it, but there's a real development phase in Cole Lind's game this year, and they're trying to change it to a center. That's the plan. That's what they're sticking to. And if that's really the end goal for them, and Cole Lind, that's a huge boost to the Canucks lineup. If he can come in and provide some offense from the center position while also being great defensively, that's just a huge add to what this Canucks top nine group is going to be. And yeah, it's a weird thing to ask, right? Like in the middle of a guy's development towards the NHL, you're like, hey, now we're going to play you at center.
Yeah.
But so far, it hasn't hurt Cole Lind this year. He's still putting up the points.
How has he looked from a defensive point of view? That obviously, when you're coming into play center, defense is, I wouldn't say the main priority, but a big part of your priority when it comes to being a center iceman. And obviously, the way that Travis Green plays too, right? He needs to trust you both ends of the ice if he feels comfortable enough to play you those big minutes. And as we know, Vancouver Canucks, they kind of need help up the middle beyond just Elias Pettersson and Bo Horvat. JT Miller, obviously, not necessarily a long-term fixture on the Canucks when it comes to that contract. I'm sure they would like to extend him, but you know, that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Cole Lind, what have you liked about his game from a pure transition point of view when it comes to moving from wing to center? Is that something that he's looked comfortable in from a defensive point of view as well?
Yeah, well, defensive and transition are two great words to use there, because the thing that I have liked about Cole Lynn's game as a center is, as the lowest forward, he's the first passing option for defensemen to pass it to, and he's done a good job of coming back to these defensemen, receiving the first pass from them, and then looking for one of his wingers in Sam Annis or Sven Berchi or Lukas Jasik, Jonah Gadjevich. These guys have all played wing with Cole Lynn this year, and he's doing a great job of just making sure that that first pass is available for a defenseman, right? Like, he's making himself very available to get a quick breakout pass. It doesn't need to be, you know, from blue line to blue line, though we're seeing Jack Rathbone do that, it seems like, every single shift that he's on the ice for the Comets. But I do like the transition part. I think that there's some work in zone that Colin needs to work on. Definitely needs to work on his faceoffs. But the thing that I do like is seeing how he's transitioning the puck from defense to offense. That's a plus in his game as a center right now.
You mentioned Jack Rathbone, and I think you like the stat line, and a lot of people are pretty excited about him. But just by watching him a little bit more than most people here from Vancouver, what do you like?
A lot. There's a lot to like about Jack Rathbone. I think that what you're seeing from him looks like a player who, you know, there was times at training camp where Nils Höglander was the best player on the ice. I felt like there were some days where Jack Rathbone was as well. And that was at Canucks training camp with all of their NHL players. He just seems to be very confident. He moves the puck so well, walks the line, has his special move where he does his fake shot, jump over left step, come down low, make a pass in front of the net. That's Rathbone's little technique right there. And he's just gone to the AHL and done nothing but put up points and make great breakout passes. So he's not far off. He's really not far off from being an NHL player. And I do think that he could slide into the Canucks lineup right now and make a difference. But if they want to develop him and don't really want him bouncing around between the taxi squad and potentially playing in games, sometimes being a seventh defenseman for the Canucks, like, it might be a better spot just to keep him in Utica to finish off the season and come in with a fresh start yet next year. Because with the weird call-ups and quarantine times, it just makes it kind of tough to really think that a guy from the AHL is going to get a shot this year with the Canucks.
Well, something that we heard a lot about Jack Rathbone when he first got drafted was that rocket of a shot. Does he have the opportunity in the AHL with the more, you know, tougher to get shots off sort of game, because it is obviously faster, you're playing against professionals. Does he have the opportunity to get that shot off? And when he does take it, is it as lethal as it was advertised?
Yeah, I mean, it looks really good. Like, just right. The form of him ripping that shot looks really good. It looks like a professional high-end slap shot. I think he's probably got a little bit of strength to build still. I mean, he's still a young kid. He's got to pack on some more muscle, look like a real man that can play in the NHL. So I think that's going to come soon. But like I said, the form is just excellent. I think that he's going to be able to get those shots off. He's playing with Jet Wu as his defense partner right now, which is a nice kind of yin and yang mix together, because, you know, Jet Wu's going to be able to bring that defensive side of things, and Rathbone's going to be able to get the offense going. So he's getting an opportunity to take a lot of those shots. Didn't take him very long at all, maybe two or three games before he was the first power play defenseman. That was kind of expected, and Canucks fans were really hoping for that instead of Ranky, who's a Blues player that was actually playing on the first power play unit. So you're seeing Rathbone in that spot, and yeah, he's getting the shots off, and he's been able to showcase some of that offensive ability that we know he has.
Chris Faber, our guest here on the wrap-up, Sportsnet 650. I am Roger Shurigal, your host. Chris, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, and we were talking about this off-air as well, was Vasilipod Kolzin, man. Like, this is a guy that has kind of a roller coaster season, it seems like, when it comes to, you know, the coaching staff trusting him, not putting him into the lineup, throwing him into the minor league system there in Russia. But now they're in the second round of their playoffs over in the KHL. Just give us an update on Pod Kolzin. What's the latest regarding him and his play this year? How's he looked as the games are starting to, you know, obviously become a lot more tougher in this postseason grind for them?
Yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, we've seen games where Vasilipod Kolzin has played 4 minutes in a full game, sometimes 6 minutes of ice time. Sometimes the coach benches him for the final, you know, 40 minutes of a hockey game throughout the KHL season. But you want to talk about recent play, we can go right back to the last period that Vasilipod Kolzin just played in. It was a 0-0 tie in their second round playoff matchup, the second game of that series. And Vasilipod Kolzin, that third period in a 0-0 tie, plays 9 minutes for his coach, Valerie Bragan, for Ska. They end up scoring a goal with Pod Colson on the ice for the power play. So I think that says enough right there. He was leading all forwards by at least 2 minutes in ice time right now. So even though that there's been some drama about, you know, the organization over there in the KHL wanting to keep Pod Colson and the coach potentially not wanting to play young players, when push came to shove in this most recent playoff game, they played Pod Colson. They played the wheels off of Pod Colson. I mean, like I said, the most minutes for every forward on that team. And that's coming from a teenager in the KHL. This isn't like a junior league. This isn't like CHL, WHL. This is the KHL. This is probably the second best hockey league in the world. And the most infamous team in the KHL, in SKA, are trusting a 19-year-old to be their leading guy on the forward group. That's something we just have never seen from that organization in the past.
Yeah, that's incredible, right? Because it shows you that when it comes to trying to ice the absolute best roster, and when winning matters the most, you're going to play your best players regardless of any sort of drama that you have, right?
Yeah.
Put all that sort of in the backseat, and all this contract drama that we talk about with Pod Colson. Will he come over to the NHL? I think he wants to, of course, but it doesn't seem to sit all that well with everybody in Russia. And that's why perhaps, you know, we talked about it earlier, he wasn't getting all of that ice time. But when it comes to push to shove, like you said, they're actually playing him, which says a lot for the kid. But what's the latest in regards to what happens once this playoff run eventually ends for Pod Colson? Is the plan for the Canucks to try and bring him over?
I think that's the plan right now. The latest we've heard from Jim Benning when he spoke to us and spoke on this station just a few weeks ago now was that was the goal. I think it's going to be a tough outcome. It's going to be a tough, really, negotiation for Jim Benning to go in there, because he's kind of negotiating almost against like a country, right? Like Russia's going to want Vasily Pod Colson to play for their team in the World Championships. This year's World Championships is going to be a very different one, because think about how many Canadians or Americans are actually going to be like, oh, we're going to go over to Europe for this World Championships with what's going on in the world through COVID. Like, you know, you're not going to see Bo Horvat go over there. He's got a new family, and right. Like, he's a guy who has played in the World Championships in the past. So he's a good example. I mean, just thinking of guys that, you know, from the NHL, I don't think many at all are going to go to the World Championships this year. So Russia is going to have a strong chance to win, Sweden as well. But that's the big thing. You know, their contract with Vasily Pod Colson goes until April 30th. If they're eliminated from the playoffs, Jim Benning can begin to negotiate to try and get them out of that contract and get them into the Vancouver Canucks lineup. But there's just so many like loops and jumps and ups and downs that you have to go through to actually get him here. I tend to lean a little bit towards we're not going to see Vasily Pod Colson in action this year. But what I do expect to happen is within the next 2 to 3 weeks here, we're going to hear Jim Benning potentially even speak to us or just give us a quote to one of the media members that he's excited to watch Vasily Pod Colson partake in the World Championships because it's going to be good for his development, blah, blah, blah. But it's not the same World Championships that everyone's came and been used to, where if you remember Quinn Hughes playing in that after he was drafted as well, that's another example of a guy who was a teenager and got the opportunity with them. Mikey DiPietro was also the third goaltender a couple years ago. I think that there is something to gain for Pod Colson from the World Championships. And the other part of making it like a positive situation would be that they're going to be able to keep 3 years of entry-level contracts starting next season. So there's some positives and negatives. Everybody wants to see what he can do in Canucks jersey, but we might just have to wait till next season.
Well, let's focus a little bit. Chris Faber, by the way, our guest. Let's focus a little bit on the actual Canucks team, right? They've gone to 4 straight games that have gone beyond regulation. This is a team that needs to try and pick up as many 2 points as much as possible. And when you're giving up loser points to the Montreal Canadiens, a team that you have yet to beat in regulation, it makes it hard for you to get into the postseason, man. And right now we're kind of at this, you know, crossroads of trying to figure out whether this team is going to be selling at the deadline or whether or not they're going to try and to make a push for it. I highly doubt, Chris, that they're going to be adding, but in your opinion, is selling the right move for the Canucks?
Yeah, I think adding any type of asset for when this team's going to be competitive is the right move. So, you know, selling off of players that are with 1 year remaining in their contract or potentially just going off of, you know, into UFA this season makes it a little bit tough for what we're going to see here at this point. But I do believe that they need to sell as much as possible. You have some guys in Tyler Mott, potentially Tanner Pearson. The injury definitely complicates a lot of things here, but there are certain players that definitely still have value. I'd be curious to see if Jordy Benn has any value to a team as a 6th, 7th defenseman. Potentially Travis Hamonic. I mean, he started to look pretty good playing alongside Quinn Hughes. So they could be, like, they should be sellers, right? Like, if you think about it, if you want to be competitive in 2 years and you have all these guys with expiring deals, you know, even Brandon Sutter, float him out for anything, right? If you get a 5th or a 6th round pick for Brandon Sutter, potentially that lands you another Victor Pershin or Dmitry Zlodiev, two prospects that I'm excited about for the Vancouver Canucks organization. So adding really anything that's going to help potentially even with prospects or even just draft picks being currency in the NHL, they need to be sellers to go all in for when they want to be competitive. And according to Jim Benning, that's 2 years away from now anyways.
Exactly. And that's the reason why I don't feel like your plan should change, right? If you're going to come out with that quote of saying that you're 2 years away, regardless of even if you're close to make the playoffs, should you not be trying to deal some of these guys, especially a guy like Tanner Pearson? I know that the injury is going to perhaps turn some teams off, but Chris, I look at, you know, in 2011, the Vancouver Canucks acquired Christopher Higgins at the trade deadline, right, from the Florida Panthers. That was a guy that was coming off of an injury. As a matter of fact, the Canucks, when they acquired him, he couldn't play for the Canucks for a couple of weeks because he was still recovering from that injury, and he ended up being a pretty useful piece for Vancouver for not only that playoff run, but for 3 or 4 years after that as well. So I kind of compare it to a situation like that where I still feel like teams that are going to be making a bit of a run in the playoffs, they wouldn't mind adding Tanner Pearson, even if that means he's going to be coming off of an injury. And especially if it's a team in the United States, he might have to quarantine depending on the NHL rules and everything anyway. So to me, Tanner Pearson is probably at the top of that list for a guy that you need to deal.
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, looking at value-wise as well, I know a lot of people have floated the idea of Tyler Mott being pretty valuable. And maybe. Like, maybe Tyler Mott is pretty valuable. Maybe he fetches you a second or a third round pick if the right situation occurs. But with Tanner Pearson, you feel like his value is a second round pick. I think right before the ankle injury, that was so unfortunate. And for new Canucks fans, welcome to what it's like being a Canucks fan. The one guy who has a lot of value goes down just weeks before the trade deadline. But yeah, if they're able to move on from him, and I know Sat Shaw here at 650 has reported that it's still possible. You know, some teams might just want to look past the injury if he's able to come back, or there may be some parts in the trade where he has to play a certain amount of games, certain things. But yeah, I mean, you want to move on from these guys if possible. And I just think you don't want to add another winger or forward that's on the wrong side of 30, because we've heard about the re-signing potentially for Tanner Pearson. Right. Unless that's a one-year deal at very cheap, I'm sticking away from that as far as possible.
And that's the great thing about you adding a player like Jimmy Vesey, right? Is that if you were to, you know, if you compare Jimmy Vesey to Tanner Pearson, I think that they're both pretty similar players. Perhaps Tanner Pearson's a little bit better on the offensive side of the puck. But the thing is, when you bring in a guy like Vesey and now you want to negotiate his contract in the offseason, you're starting your negotiations at a very small number, right? Perhaps only over $1 million. Whereas with a player like Tanner Pearson, you're starting that negotiation at a much higher number. He's already making $3.7 million. How much smaller or less of a number can you really start your negotiations at? I mean, I think that number would have to start at 3. Chris, really quickly here, we're kind of running out of time, but I kind of want to get your thoughts on something that we were talking about just off air, the expansion draft, right? The Vancouver Canucks' defensive issues sort of when it comes to the expansion draft in particular. Quinn Hughes is obviously exempt, but Nate Schmidt is a guy that is going to be for sure locked, protected by the Vancouver Canucks. And then the other two interesting pieces are Olli Juolevi and in particular Tyler Myers. What's the sort of unique circumstances here with the Vancouver Canucks that they kind of have to, you know, find themselves to figure out, and how does that involve acquiring another defenseman?
Yeah, you and I think we talked ourselves into bringing this to the radio, because it was a long conversation to get to this final result. But what we see right now with the Vancouver Canucks is they're able to protect three defensemen. Nate Schmidt's a no-brainer. Olli Juolevi seems to be the other one. Like you mentioned, Quinn Hughes exempt from protection, so that's all good. But then there's a third spot. Are you going to protect Tyler Myers And then, you know, the other team can come out and potentially get a Jordy Benn or an Alex Edler if you extend those guys. Maybe, but you need to add a defenseman or you're going to have to expose Tyler Myers in the fence in the expansion draft. So you look around the league, and I know we were just kind of digging up some teams and looking at some of their top fours that they have to protect. When they're only able to protect their top three, you're looking at a top four on a good defense. We were kind of looking at Colorado or Carolina. Both these teams had a lot of depth at defense where if you add one of these guys, even if you're losing Tyler Myers, I think Pesci was one of the ones that popped up. Brett Pesci. If Brett Pesci's the guy who's coming into your lineup and Tyler Myers ends up being picked up, you just saved money on a contract. You also probably just got a better defenseman for your top four. So there's a lot of interesting situations, and I think it has to start with the Canucks exposing Tyler Myers as their defenseman. I'll be interested to see if Jim Benning also wants to make that move because he's the one who signed that long contract with Tyler Myers. There's obviously something in Myers' game that Benning appreciates. There's a reason why he gave them that much money for that many years. I would be surprised, I think, to see the Canucks go out and proactively acquire a better top four option from another team that can't just doesn't want to give up that player for absolutely nothing. Like, they would probably like to get a fourth or a fifth round pick in return, potentially a third if it's a real strong top four defenseman. The Canucks need to be proactive and do that. They need to be that team giving out that pick for that. And I think that's where a lot of these other trades, like we asked and you asked about earlier, go out and sell Tanner Pearson, sell Brandon Sutter, and maybe you can put together some currency that helps you make a move for the expansion draft so you can add another top four defenseman to this group of Quinn Hughes and Nate Schmidt and Jack Rathbone coming through and Olia Levy coming through. You can really add a veteran kind of 24 to 28-year-old defenseman who's really ready to start competing with this team.
Yeah, and you're right, because it all comes down to the fact if they are able to add a defenseman, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they add a defenseman, then you have then you could theoretically protect Tyler Myers, or you can unprotect Tyler Myers and protect the other defenseman that you would acquire, and that would get you to the three defensemen that you would eventually end up protecting, which would be Nate Schmidt, Olia Levy, and either Myers or whoever the other one happens to be. Yeah. I think we're both on the same page that Myers should be left unprotected. And even that way, and even if, like, you know, your example was great of Brett Pesci, you potentially Myers gets picked up and you bring in a guy like Brett Pesci, younger, more less money, probably a better defenseman. That's the best case scenario. But even in a situation where Tyler Myers doesn't get picked up, you just add it to your blue line.
Absolutely. You just made Tyler Myers into your fifth guy in the depth chart,
which is fantastic.
A guy that's better than him for
exactly.
nothing.
Yeah. And Tyler Myers being a number five in your depth chart, sure, you don't want to be paying a number five guy $6 million, but just from a pure hockey talent point of view, Myers as a five guy is actually pretty good.
Absolutely. And I think he's a guy who fits with Olia Levy, who would fit into being that number six guy for next season. So, you know, if Tyler Myers is out there, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer. But I still don't know if that's the move that Jim Benning's going to make. So we'll have to see what happens here. And this is a little bit away, so this is some nice off-season talk that we'll be able to dive into, I'm sure, a ton.
Hey, Chris, really appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
That is Chris Faber. Really appreciate all of his insight. Lots more NHL talk coming up on the other side. Harpreet Pander from Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, getting set to join us. This is the wrap-up. You're on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now, back to the wrap-up with Rajah Shergill on Sportsnet 650.
And welcome back to the show. It is the wrap-up. What's going on, Vancouver? Rajah Shergill with you. Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Vancouver Canucks. 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in. I'm going to be joined by Harpreet Pander of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. Harp loves his history, man. He loves his hockey history. If you're a nerd for hockey history, I think you're going to love this conversation that we're going to have with Harpreet Pander getting set to join us. In just a few seconds' time, Rajah Shergill, on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks. Thank you so much for joining us. Follow me on Twitter as well, @share_Raja. That is @SHER_RAJA. Tweet at me. Also, you can tweet at the station @Sportsnet650. Lots to get into with Harpreet Pander here on the wrap-up. We'll talk about a lot about what's happening across the NHL. Also, what's happening in the history of the NHL. March 21st, today, lots of things going on within the National Hockey League, Harp, and we want to dive right into it. First of all, how are you, and hope everything is well with you, man?
I'm doing well, Roger. How are you?
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us today. A little bit of a blooper on your end yesterday on Hockey Night in Canada, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was the first time it happened in 7 years. I took my headset off after the game was done, and we do a booth hit, and so I stand in my spot. I don't got my headset on, and I'm talking, and when they cut back to the studio, I didn't know what was going on. I just heard a bunch of guys laughing hysterically in the back there.
So you ran back for your headset?
Yeah, but it wasn't on cam. They cut to the studio with Randeep and Repreet and Sukhdeev sitting there, but I had it back on, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, it happened.
It's part of the fun. We have a lot of fun on Hockey Night, and that's just part of it.
That's what we do.
Exactly. Roger Shergill, Harpreet Pander with you. It is the wrap-up of the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We'll go down memory lane with Harpreet Pander as well. Harp, I know you're a big historic NHL guy. You love your history in the National Hockey League. And March 21st, today in the NHL, lots of great history-making moments, including something that happened right here in Vancouver in our own backyard at Denman Arena, isn't there?
Yeah, it was in 1921. At the old Denman Arena, and it was the largest crowd to date. They jam-packed 11,000 fans, and that was quite something for back in the day. It was game one of the Stanley Cup final. The Millionaires defeated the Sens by a score of 3-1, but the Millionaires would go on to lose that series in five games. So Denman Arena was quite something. It was the first rink to actually have artificial ice. You know, we call it ice, but it is artificial ice.
Yeah. And that was, I guess, the Senators. They must have been getting revenge on the Millionaires then, because Vancouver had beaten Ottawa, I think, just 5 years prior to that to win Vancouver's only Stanley Cup.
That is right. And 1991 was quite a historic game. I remember watching this just on Sportsnet a couple of weeks ago. I think they replayed it. It was Ron Tugnutt's 70-save performance. He was playing for the Quebec Nordiques when they tied the Boston Bruins 3-3 at the Garden. And Ray Bourque set an NHL record that night for 19 shots on goal.
Wow.
And he still holds today. It was Guy Lafleur's last ever game at the Garden. He was a member of the Quebec Nordiques. And there's one more that kind of sticks out as 1985, Washington Forwards. Bobby Carpenter became the first U.S.-born player to score 50 goals. Speaking of 50 goals, on that very date, March 21st, 1993, Mario Lemieux and Kevin Stevens each score in the first period during a 6-4 victory against the Oilers. It was a neutral site game at Cleveland. Both guys scored their 50th goal in the same game.
Wow. That's kind of comparable to like Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin both scoring hat-tricks in that one playoff game a couple of years back, wasn't it?
I guess so, but it's different when two guys on the same team do it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that just shows you how, the amount of goal scoring back then, right? You're not going to get two players scoring 50 goals from one team in the NHL this year, let alone, you know, having one 50-goal scorer in the entire NHL. The game has progressed so much.
That 1993 Penguins team was stacked. They were coming off of back-to-back wins. Cup wins, and they're heavy favorites going in again to three-peat. So they go, you know, game seven against the Islanders, overtime, and Kevin Stevens, he took a bad hit. He was out, and he was never the same after that because he had plates put in his cheek there because he basically did a face plant, was never the same player again, and the Pens went on to lose by a David Bullock overtime goal assisted by Ray Ferraro.
Hey, we're actually wrapping it up. We're wrapping up the entire NHL on this show today. Harpreet Pander with us going down memory lane. It's History with Harp, the segment here on the show. Roger Shergill, Harpreet Pander. You know what's an interesting stat that always stands out to me, Harp? And you and I have talked about this before, but it's the fact that from 1981 all the way until all the way until 2002, there's only been three Art Ross Trophy winners. That's incredible. And now, granted, most of them were Wayne Gretzky, a little bit of a cheat code. But the fact that you only had three Art Ross Trophy winners in that span, that's a pretty incredible stat to me. I don't think a lot of people would look at that. And I think a lot of people would look at that, and be quite surprised.
Yeah, and they hit Lemieux, they hit Gretzky in there, and it takes some people a while to figure out that Jágr is the third guy there. So that's a very long stretch, and I think it was 03 or 04 when Aginla was like just another name that finally won the Art Ross, a name other than Lemieux, Gretzky, or Jágr. You'll never see that again. You won't even see that in a 5-year span now.
Are you surprised that it was Jerome Iginla? Like, sometimes we forget and how great a player like Jerome Iginla was. You just don't see those kinds of power forwards in the NHL nowadays. But he was a true, legitimate superstar sniper in his time. And he was obviously had the ability to throw down as well. Kind of a throwback kind of player.
He was a top five player for sure. Going from 2002, all the way up until 2008, you can say. He was a top five player, arguably the top player. I mean, I remember Trevor Linden's last game. They're doing the handshake. The Flames did a really classy thing by staying on the ice, and they all shook Linden's hand. And the camera, the audio picked it up too, and you could hear Linden say, "Hey, man, you're the best player in the game." And again, that was so humble about it. He was asked by Scott Oak, I believe, after the game, they're like, "Hey, what did Trevor say to you?" And he didn't even want to say what he said. He goes, It's personal. I just want to keep that to myself.
Yeah, I remember that. And, the Vancouver Canucks reciprocated that a few years later when Ryan Smith had his retirement. They came back onto the ice to say thank you to Ryan Smith for all that he's done in the world of hockey.
And that was the Sedins on the ice, and that was their call doing that. And, Oilers paid the favor back for the Sedins when they played their last game in Edmonton. So that's stuff that doesn't happen often, but... You always remember that kind of stuff.
For sure. And, we were just talking a little bit about Jerome Iginla there. I like having this history sort of segment, Harp. The fact that Jerome Iginla, such a talented player, but obviously played on the wing. And not to say that we don't see wingers like that that just absolutely dominate the game. We for sure do. But there's one that stands out to me, and he's currently playing, and he's having an absolute great season. And in my estimation, he should be in the consideration for the Hart Trophy, and that is Patrick Kane. What he is doing right now with the Chicago Blackhawks, getting him into the playoff race pretty much on his back. There's no Jonathan Toews there either. What can you say about the Blackhawks this season, and in particular Patrick Kane?
Kane is pretty timeless. He just hit 1,000 games, and so he's got a bunch of games under his belt, and he's still scoring at this pace where it seems like, he would slow down or a player at that age who's played 1,000 games, but he's still torching the points at this point. And, Chicago is not expected at the beginning of the season, nobody would really predict this team to be in a spot to make the playoffs, but Kane is really carrying his team on his back right now, and he's giving him a legit shot at making the playoffs this year.
Roger Shergill and Harpreet Pander. It is the wrap-up on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Harp, I'm not sure how much people anticipated the fact that we might have a big battle of Florida and that becoming kind of a rivalry and those two teams contending for top spot in their respective divisions. I mean, I know a lot of people obviously had the Tampa Bay Lightning finishing at the top, despite the fact that Nikita Kucherov is going to be out for the remainder, was going to be out for the rest of the regular season, and he still seems to be on that track to perhaps come back in the playoffs. But how much of a surprise have the Florida Panthers been, and is there a scenario that you think that they might be able to finish a top spot in that division?
Well, why not? They're only 2 points back of Tampa for first place. They've both played 30 games. Both these Florida teams, Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers, this is the first time they've been 1-2 respective in their division since 2015-16. Although this is a different makeup of a division, the central division, so to speak, but Florida has come as a surprise to me. They kind of really didn't have any pressure coming in. You got to give lots of credit to Joel Quenneville. He's got to be the front runner for the Jack Adams Trophy this year. What he's done with this club, they're going to make the playoffs this year, and that's something they haven't done in quite some time. So kudos to him. This team's having a lot of success.
Yeah, it's weird. First of all, it's great for the NHL to have both Florida markets be as successful as they are right now. Obviously, Tampa Bay just won the Stanley Cup last season, and they're having so many great players on that team. Obviously, if a team is able to play to the level that they are without their top superstar. Obviously, that means they're an incredibly elite-level team. But again, just says so much about the NHL, the fact that these two markets are able to put on some good hockey games right now. And it speaks to, yeah, you mentioned it, Joel Quenneville there, but also the goaltending aspect in Florida is kind of a unique one, right? Sergei Bobrovsky signs that big ticket, $8 million contract, or $10 million contract, I should say, for 8 years, and he just has not really lived up to expectations. However, the great thing for the Florida Panthers is that they have a guy right behind him in Chris Drieger who is able to carry that load and sort of put the Panthers on his back. It's kind of a good thing and a bad thing at the same time that you have this big ticket, but unfortunately he's not doing much. However, they're still playing as well as they are.
Yeah, and you know what? As long as one of your goalies is hot, that's all that matters. And, you know, had Florida been slumping and, you know, Bobrovsky on this heavy contract is not performing, the team's not winning, that's a different story. That being said, you know, Bobrovsky, he still has time to bounce back, and there's less pressure on him to bounce back because the team is winning without him. That being said, he does start net for them this afternoon, and that tilt is against Tampa. So, you know, they get the win tonight. They're tied with Tampa for first in that division.
Roger Shergill and Harpreet Pander. It is the wrap-up on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We haven't had a chance to hit on the Vancouver Canucks in this segment, Harp. Vancouver, obviously, once again, another game that goes into overtime or shootout. They're giving up these loser points when it was against the Ottawa Senators and when it's against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Those two teams, obviously, at the top of the division and, in Ottawa's case, at the very bottom of the division. When you're giving up those loser points to those teams, doesn't really make too much of a difference. But now they've done it in back-to-back games against the Montreal Canadiens. And as a matter of fact, they've actually given up points to Montreal in each game they've played against them this season. They have yet to beat the Habs in regulation. Is that just really, you know, got punching themselves or shooting themselves in the foot by giving up all these loser points to Montreal as they continue to try and make this push for the postseason?
Well, you know, I think they got unlucky in the Friday game. You know, a bad call goes against them, and it was kind of the difference of Montreal pushing that game to overtime. So, you know, Canucks were they got the win. You know, Miller scores that unbelievable goal in overtime, and they get the 2 points. But the problem there was that Montreal got a point for, you know, the loser point. So, you know, you come out of that game only plus one against Montreal. Last night, heavily outplayed, don't really even deserve a point. They were lucky to get that point. You know, they're down a goal going into the third. They get a couple of quick goals. They take the lead. Montreal ties it. They go in, and it's just like, you know, if somehow, some way they get this win in overtime or a shootout, it's just another bonus. You know, that they had no business kind of really even being in that game. So Montreal takes the extra point, and you look at the total. So Montreal took away 3 points. Vancouver took away 3 points in this two-game set. So it was a complete wash. So I really think the Canucks should have been coming out of this with at least a point or two on Montreal. So, but it is just the other two teams. Calgary struggled, so Canucks, their percentage looks a little bit better of making the playoffs, but that being said, it's still a bit of a long shot for them to make it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a long shot. I mean, they've really picked up their game in this month, and a lot of that has to be with the play of Thatcher Demko, right? He has been absolutely playing elite-level hockey this year. Yesterday, of course, Vancouver elected to go with Braden Holtby. I get it. I probably, if I was a head coach, I might have gone with Thatcher Demko in that game just because of how important the 2 points really were. And more importantly than even the 2 points, like I just mentioned, getting the sole possession of 2 points and not giving any up to Montreal, that never ended up happening. But were you okay with giving Braden Holtby that game because of the fact that Demko needed rest? Or is this one of those types of situations that the Canucks have themselves in, where it's almost like the postseason now, because in the playoffs, you're riding your guy no matter what. You're not going to be switching your goaltender out in the postseason. Is that sort of the mentality the Canucks should be approaching now as the season is only pretty much over almost, just 20 or so games left?
Well, last night, our play-by-play guy in Punjabi, Mantat Pandal, and I, we were having a quick chat on, what goes behind this decision here? Because, it is a back-to-back situation, and I've seen it with other teams. There's been goalies that played back-to-back where the team is doing quite well, and one of the main reasons is it's kind of they don't have a reliable backup, so to speak, right? So they're just riding their number one. We saw that with Edmonton earlier this season. They're riding Koskinen quite a bit because they just didn't have a proven backup with Mike Smith out of the lineup. So here we have a proven player, but he's been cold all year, is Braden Holtby. So in this situation, I was all for the Canucks starting Demko. He's a hot hand. Just ride him, because the situation here is, yeah, sure, it's a back-to-back. And you got two games with a rest in between nights. You got that set coming between two games, Monday and Wednesday against the Jets. After that, the Canucks are off for a week. So this guy's got a full week to recover. Sure, he's going to have a bunch of games, four games in as many nights. But he's got a week off, so why not ride him? And the Canucks, chose otherwise. And I'm just wondering, does he ask the guy if he's good? Like, hey, you okay if we sit you or what? But, if he was good to go, why not start him? And it seems like, I just felt like, the goals that kind of went in last night on Holtby, those are goals that Thatcher Demko doesn't let in. Like, he sees everything. And it looks like Holtby's fighting the puck. He just has rebound, doesn't have the rebound control that Thatcher Demko does. That's for sure.
Roger Shergill and Harpreet Pander with us for a few more minutes here on the wrap-up on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I just want to focus on everything else happening around the NHL. Harp, and one of the teams that have been the most surprising to me this year has been the Philadelphia Flyers. They're obviously a team that probably had Stanley Cup aspirations. Now, whether you believe that they're a Stanley Cup team, that's an entirely different story, but I think from within the organization, they really hope that they can get that team to at least make a deep playoff run. And right now, they're on the outside of the playoff bubble looking in. And a big part of that has to do with the play of their goaltender, Carter Hart, has not exactly played up to the standard that we've seen from him in years past, only an .875 save percentage. And in the last two games, in the last three games, they've lost 9-0 to the Rangers, and last night, 6-1 to the New York Islanders. It's not looking good in the city of brotherly love. Obviously, former Vancouver Canucks head coach Alain Vigneault is the man in charge there. What are you seeing with Philadelphia and just the lackluster season that they have had?
Well, with Carter Hart, this is probably his first full season because his first rookie year, he played about 30 games. Last year, the season goes on pause because you know what happened. And this year, he started about 18 games, and his record is 8-7. Last year, it kind of seemed like he was turning the corner, and these guys had a legit number one because he did struggle in his rookie year. And he's a rookie. There's a big learning curve. So last year, it looks like he was coming into his own. And this year, again, he's got, a terrible goals against. It's 3.83 with a save percentage of .875. So there is a struggle. And this has been their tandem for the last, going on 3 years with Brian Elliott as their backup. And Elliott, he's been very mediocre, to say the best about him, since he's been in Philly. He's always hot and cold in St. Louis. So, Philly, they haven't had a decent goalie number one in quite some time.
Yeah, that's a team that has obviously kind of had that designation of being a goalie graveyard. You would hope that it was fixed and rectified with Carter Hart coming in there and being as dominant as he was. But is this just another rookie going through growing pains? I know he's not a rookie, obviously, but just another young player going through growing pains after having a successful start to the season last year?
Yeah, for him, if you look at it, he hasn't really played a full season yet. And coming in this year, he was, you know, a number one. And now it's just like these guys are bouncing between both goalies because neither of them are really having much success.
Right. Roger Shergill, Harpreet Pander with you. It is the wrap-up on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Harp, I know a lot of people don't like talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially out west here in Vancouver, but they're a team that has struggled a little bit as of late. Maybe that'll make some people happy because that's why we're talking about them right now. But the Edmonton Oilers are now tied with them in points in the North Division. Obviously, the Oilers have a couple of more games played than them, but is that race to the top of the North Division now? It's a lot tighter than we probably anticipated, at least in the beginning of the season when Toronto was just running away with everything. What have you liked about that race, and do you think that the Edmonton Oilers and perhaps even the Winnipeg Jets can legitimately contend against the Toronto Maple Leafs here as the season gets nearer and nearer to the end of the year, and then we get to the playoffs as well? Because we know Toronto, of course, kind of has that reputation of not being the greatest team in the postseason.
Yeah, well, you know, Winnipeg was number two for a bit. There was a couple of nights where Edmonton was, at least for one night, they were number one. So Edmonton has two games in hand on the Leafs. They're tied for points right now. So, backwards. Leafs have two games in hand on Edmonton, but they're tied in points. So had Winnipeg beat Edmonton last night, it would have been even a much tighter race with Toronto at 42, and it would have been Edmonton at 40 and Winnipeg at 40. So the Oilers definitely stole the game last night. They were down by a goal going into that third period. You can't count out Montreal either at fourth spot. They got 37 points, and they played 31 games. So a lot can happen here, Roger. There can be a lot of shuffling because there's a lot of sets. They're all four-point games. And I think it's going to be even closer going down the stretch, and it's probably going to come down to the last game. It's going to be probably a play-in game. Let's just say, you know, Vancouver and Calgary, their final game is May the 8th, and let's just say Montreal gets a little bit cold here and they fall down a bit. It's going to come down to, say, an example for a Montreal-Calgary, Vancouver versus Calgary to make the playoffs on the last game of the regular season.
Harp, it was kind of an impromptu segment, but history with Harp, how do you feel we continue that next time?
Sure, I love living in the past. Maybe I should just stay in the present moment sometimes. How about that?
Yeah, hey, I learn a lot. Two different generations speaking hockey. You're a little bit more old school than I am, though, and I'm pretty old school.
You're too young. You were too young to ever go to the Denman Arena.
Oh, yeah, a little too young. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, Harp.
Sounds good, Raj. We'll do this soon.
That is Harpreet Pander from Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, giving us some of his time today. Really appreciate it. Love the knowledge. Love the insight that Harp brings. Love the energy that he brings as well. I said it there at the end. Harp and I'm actually a pretty old school guy. For anybody who has listened to my hockey opinions on these airwaves in the past, and anybody that sees my tweets, I'm a pretty old school hockey guy, but Harp takes it a little bit to another level, not in the sense of, you know, conservative hockey opinions in like when it comes to fighting or hitting or anything like that. That's kind of a little bit more my forte. I like a little bit more physicality in my hockey. I'll be the first person to admit it. I've been called a dinosaur before, even though I'm a pretty young hockey mind. That being said, with Harp, he likes the old hockey. Just the style of hockey that was played back then. I think he likes the more goals. I think he likes the fact that all of these records and all of these great athletes played back then in the Wayne Gretzky and the Mario Lemieux. That's the era that he grew up with. I'm sure a lot of you people that are listening right now, that's how you feel as well, because that's the era that you grew up with. It's always great to hear Harp's perspective on these things, because all I've ever done about certain milestones that have happened around the NHL is I've only read about them, or maybe I've watched a clip on YouTube. So I don't necessarily have the type of, the type of connection to those clips that other people that were obviously living in that moment had. And so to hear Harp talk about all of these amazing feats that happened in the history of the NHL over the course of, you know, in the 90s and the early 80s, it's always great to go down memory lane with him and really get his perspective. And the thing that really did stand out to me, and again, me and Harp had talked about this probably, sometime a couple of years ago, the fact that it was only three people to win the Art Ross Trophy with Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, and Jaromir Jagr from the 1980s all the way till 2002 before Jerome Iginla won it. Only three players in that span winning the Art Ross Trophy. That is unheard of. And it's incredible the fact that, you know, we had something like that in the NHL. So, again, not something that I really can look back at with fond memories, but somebody like Harp really had that insight. I love talking to him about that. It always makes for interesting conversations for me, at least. I hope you guys feel the same way as well. I'm Roger Shergill. Thank you guys so much for listening to the program today. I really appreciate your guys' time. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Share your feedback. Really hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight. Lots more Vancouver Canucks talk on these airwaves as the team looks to continue to make their playoff push. Tomorrow night, they're also back in action, taking on the Winnipeg Jets, a team that I actually think they've had a lot of success against this season, which might be a little surprising considering since Winnipeg's return to the NHL, they've actually had Vancouver's number for the better part. But the Canucks this year, in my opinion at least, have probably played some of their better games against the Jets. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. You could catch all of the action right here on these airwaves. Sportsnet 650, we are the official home of the Vancouver Canucks. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Roger Shergill. This has been The Wrap-Up. You're on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.